Welcome to AI in Journalism. I'm Yumi Wilson, a journalism professor, branding expert, and your host. In this podcast, we'll boldly explore the intersection of AI and journalism, from its origins to its implications for newsrooms. We'll discuss the symbiosis of AI and human judgment, ethical concerns, and most importantly, arm you with the knowledge to navigate this brave new world. Whether you're a budding journalist, seasoned editor, or simply an AI enthusiast, join us as we fearlessly uncover the future of journalism in the age of artificial intelligence. Welcome to AI in Journalism.
Welcome, curious minds, to AI in Journalism. I'm Yumi Wilson, your guide through the complex world where artificial intelligence meets the fourth estate. Today, we're diving into how AI is changing how we create, consume, and understand news. And our guest, David Byrne, is here to shed light on this transformation.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining the show. I'm really excited to talk with you about so many things, including, you know, the fact that your name is similar to someone from the Talking Heads. But hey, that comes later. For now, I do want to tell our listeners a little bit more about you, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So you've got 16 years of experience at least in digital advertising at Google, Spotify, and TikTok. And yet, from my research, I have discovered that you are doing something very different. You are leading initiatives in brand safety and industry relations, and it feels like you are trying to create a trustworthy and sustainable digital ads ecosystem.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. To give some background, during my time at Google, I started off as just an account manager working on selling ads to various different advertisers. I specifically worked in retail. And I just found myself getting really interested in the product side of things. And I ended up in a product marketing role. And then when I moved to New York almost 10 years ago now, Google was booming. Everything was going great. And then all of a sudden, there was this moment called the adpocalypse, where a load of advertisers noticed that their ads were appearing on not so great content. And what this kind of made the advertising industry do is reassess how they target ads, who they're targeting it to, and what data that they're using to do so, and where does the flow of money go to. And that's how I ended up getting into this realm of like, oh, like, we need to actually provide a ecosystem, a structure that is safer, is more transparent, is more accountable. So that's been like a big passion of mine, particularly for the last 8-9 years or so. So I've really invested a lot of time there. And that's kind of like where I spent the last few years. But as you mentioned, I've gone to TikTok subsequently, went to Spotify subsequently, and now doing a lot of consulting work with a number of advertisers, but also NGOs and small businesses who are just really trying to understand how they can navigate the digital landscape in a safe and secure manner.
And are we talking about Trust Raise?
Exactly. Yes, that is my little consultancy business. It's a team of one, and to an extent, my wife as well. She's my unpaid advisor on all things.
I hear you on that. It's kind of like the David versus Goliath story, right? That TrustRaise has been described as a beacon of hope for smaller organizations navigating ethical media practices. So yeah, let's talk about TrustRaise. How can people find out about TrustRaise? What is it doing right now?
Yeah, so the website is trustraise.com. The way I kind of came up with a name was, I was thinking of two different ways. Firstly, some of the companies that I work with, they are doing some great work in responsible media and they're trying to fundraise. And what I was trying to say was like, hey, like, let's try to find those activist investors, the ones that are really not only looking to get a return on their investment, but really believe in it and become advocates for your business. So Trustways was a bit of a play on that. But also, I was also thinking about it from the advertisers who want to build trust with their markets and like with their audiences. So between those two things, Trustways seemed to come together as a nice natural name for the consultancy. So yeah, trustraise.com. Basically, the things that I'm kind of looking at right now, I've mentioned two different areas, the fundraising side of things and the kind of advisory side of things. On the fundraising side of things, as I mentioned, there is some fantastic businesses that are really building some innovative products, innovative solutions. I think what's been fantastic to see is where you would potentially have organizations that would take years to build up, they are introducing AI at the right moments to help get them to a point where something that would have taken them 3 years to build is now taking them 9 months to build. So there's a lot of great startups coming up in the industry, particularly around cybersecurity and a little bit around like content moderation to help actually fight against misinformation, disinformation, and you know, hate speech and more kind of aggressive content and harmful content that you see online. So it's always great to work with those kind of businesses because one, they're fast moving, innovative, and you just have these people that are so mission driven that you can work with. So I'm always looking to meet more people like that. Even if I don't get to work with them every day, just hearing from those kind of people, it's just really inspiring. And then the second side is those more the consultancy side of things where, you know, I'm helping businesses where maybe they don't have the resources quite yet to build a big marketing campaign with all of these, you know, decisions about where to show up, when to show up, what data to use, how to use it. And, you know, the digital ecosystem is a difficult space for advertisers to navigate if you're really trying to align yourself with your values and principles. Because you have, obviously, the big websites that everybody knows about. They cost a lot of money. So you're competing against big advertisers there. So then you're trying to go for like lower cost inventory. And the problem with lower cost inventory is there is so much terrible content mixed in with lower cost inventory. But there's also some great content. There's some great local news, for example. So with a lot of my advisory work there, it's really about helping those folks that can't invest in like building their own strategy, just advising them on how they can go about it, how they can find that great content, and how they can really show up in the places that aligns with their values and builds trust with their audience. Two very different things there, but overall, it really comes down to just helping make sure that the right things get funded, whether that be the right businesses or the right content online.
What are some of the organizations that you're supporting and as they try to do good things in journalism?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the way that we met was through a company called Legitimate.
Legitimate.net, by the way.
Legitimate.net, yes. I have been so excited about them. It's really funny. So probably folks listening can tell by my accent that I'm Irish. Legitimate are also an Irish business, but we didn't meet through any Irish network. I had spoken to an investor that I knew from investing in very similar companies before. And he was like, if you're really into responsible media and like innovative AI and helping like fund great online content, you should check this out. And within moments of meeting with Kiva and Jared, the founders of Legitimate, I was like, I want to be involved somehow. I need to help these two. So for those who don't know, Legitimate is this organization that has built this amazing infrastructure for journalists, so for individuals in particular, to build up their own kind of personal brand, where they have these tools and resources that they can create this bio. And what's really exciting about that, and one of the areas that I'm particularly excited about that, is that Legitimate then are plugging into other locations then, so that your bio gets presented when people are actually scrolling through a feed or something like that, and your article has been posted. What that means then is let's just say if you're scrolling through a feed on any social platform, you scroll through a feed, you see an article being posted, you read the headline, you're like, oh, should I click on that? Like, I don't recognize this website. Is it safe? Is it trustworthy? What Legitimate does is you can hover over it, and Legitimate will have this nice little window that opens up to show you, this is the journalist that wrote this. This is the kind of previous content that they've written. And basically says, this is a trustworthy person.
So I don't have to click on the, let's say, clickbait. If I see a headline, I can have some security going, okay, let me find out who actually wrote this and who they are a little bit before I make that action.
Exactly. And one of the things there is that as you're scrolling through, if you scroll over something that Legitimate hasn't been able to confirm that it was written by a real person or by somebody that's trustworthy, it will kind of say like, hey, we don't know. We don't have information on this. It won't say that it's like, don't click here because this can't be trusted. It's more that it's emphasizing that, hey, like, you know, we don't know what this is. So just be aware of that if you are going to click on it. What I love about this is firstly, there is an ongoing erosion of trust in the news media, because I think a lot of people are finding that they just can't trust everything that they read online. They can't trust everything that is presented to them, because there is so much noise that is coming from nefarious actors. And also as well, there's so many bots now that are just creating absolute nonsense. And with all of that, it's really hard for individuals to kind of scroll through and navigate and say, what is trustworthy? So even just knowing that a person has spent the time thinking about what is written on the next page, they truly believe what they're saying, and that it's something that they stand behind, I think it gives that extra element of like, okay, I know that there's somebody behind this. I can trust this that little bit more. When you then think about like what that means for the journalist as well, is that for journalists, as I mentioned earlier, it kind of builds their brand as well, because it shows that, hey, like this is somebody that is, you know, a legitimate person, to use the name Legitimate, and like this is their bio. If you want to click on it, read more, you can see what else they've published, like what credentials that they have. And, you know, when you think of like newsrooms right now, I think we all see these stories of like newsrooms shutting down or the lack of funding. I think one thing that also then empowers is like a lot of great journalists are trying to figure out how they can go out and do this on their own. And this is just another great tool to support them in doing that.
You've hit the nail on the head there, because part of the reason why I launched AI in Journalism as a podcast and why I'm building services that will help people, you know, optimize their profiles and resumes and cover letters is because I'm hearing from colleagues and friends who may have been in the industry for 15, 20 years and now have been laid off and are looking for, you know, what do I do next? And I think this service, I didn't mention that I had a chance to interview Kiva Donnelly about legitimate.net. And the idea that you can archive your articles, if you sign up, you have a place where your stories that you've already produced live on. For example, I used to work at the San Francisco Chronicle many years ago, and I was recently looking for some of the articles I wrote those years ago. I can't find it on the web. They used to exist. They used to be, you know, discoverable, and they're gone.
And that's so tough. Imagine if that was the situation in any other career. Imagine if you were an author and you had authored like numerous books. I've actually been reading Blake Crouch because I watched Dark Matter on Apple TV Plus recently. So I've been reading his books. But imagine if he has short stories and old books dating back 15, 20 years. Imagine him as an author was like, I can't even access what I've written before. I know that you may have written that for a publisher, but that's your thoughts that are just now lost in the ether. That is something that you put so much effort into, you know, you've kind of like lost that. And I think legitimate.net offers an added element of control then, that you can kind of really control making sure that you maintain some level of connection to the work that you've done previously, which if you've been working in journalism for years and like you're now finding that you're out on your own for maybe the first time in 2 decades, like having that inventory as a foundation for you to then go out and build your own individual brand is so powerful. And like, that's, again, one of the things I love about Kiva and Jared and the team at legitimate.net is that they've spoken to so many journalists that they've expressed these concerns, and they have built these tools to accommodate that and to address these kind of concerns. So it's really great. And we haven't even got into some of the AI that they're providing as well for these journalists, and like some of these great additional tools to help not only archive and the previous content, but help them build their next piece of content, you know?
Let me ask you a question about that, because on the show with Kiva, she did talk about some of the tools, for example, that, you know, 3 hours of transcription is provided to journalists who sign up, and that's great service. But my question is, just as the question comes up in any AI tool that one uses, is the data that the journalist provides, is that private to that journalist, or is it going to become part of, you know, deep learning, you know, to help others, to inform others?
So it's a really interesting question. And the way that I've been thinking about this just generally is thinking about your digital twin, right? So if folks don't know, your digital twin is basically your online presence. And your online presence is everything that you've posted, everything that you've created. In itself, the reason why it's called a digital twin, it's basically, it's your representation. It's basically your reputation in the digital ecosystem. I think the concern that you're kind of bringing up there is whether people are going to find that AI is being trained off of their digital twin. Like, imagine if that happened in the real world. Imagine if, like, you left your home in the middle of the day and you came back and somebody had just gone through your home and gone like, right, I've taken photos of everything and I'm going to copy this exact layout of exactly what you're doing in your home. And yeah, we're going to actually also like merge it with your neighbor's home as well. And like, we're just going to like cobble it all together. So you'll see some new house being built down the road, which is going to look really similar to yours, but not exactly like yours. You'd be creeped out. You'd be like, this is an invasion of my privacy. This is an invasion of my space. And you're then taking my ideas, you've taken my identity, and you've twisted it and you've changed it. And I think we're moving into a space now where you can start thinking about your digital twin in the same way, that a lot of companies that are training on data where they're just pulling stuff from what they are calling publicly sourced information, which is basically like, if you've posted anything online, they're going to train from it. And I feel like that more and more people, content creators, are starting to see like imagery or text that they're like, hang on a second, this looks eerily similar to what I've created. And what I'm getting to here with the digital twin, though, is that I think there's going to come a potential moment of empowerment for folks that have a very strong online brand identity for themselves, where you're starting to see a lot of these AI companies making deals with the likes of Reddit and making deals with a lot of publishers to say, hey, we want to train off of your data and we're going to pay you for this. And like, some publishers have said, no, not interested. Some have said, come right in, like, your money's good here. Like, let's have like a nice little annual fee for training on the data. Imagine if we could get it down to a level where you could get paid if an AI system was trained on your digital twin. And that's where I think then having these kind of strong online brands, I think if you're investing in a strong online brand and like have a central resource that you can point to and go, hey, Like, it's here. It's all here. I'm happy to sell this if you're comfortable with it. Some people may not be, but that's where I think we could get into a very interesting area of like the future of intellectual property rights and that kind of thing. That's my hope for the future. I think we're still a bit away from that. But what I'm trying to say there is like, I think firstly, if you are going to be working online, it's like just understanding that like there are going to be obviously concerns about AI, but I do think that investing in like your online identity, making it strong and robust, and making sure then that when the time comes that you're ready to say, yes, I want in on this, but I want to be compensated, or no, this is my property and I want to keep it as is. I think that's going to be really, really crucial moving forward. So I know it's not like a perfect answer to everything, but that's my hope, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And it's actually exciting, you know, when you think of musicians and artists with their copy being copyrighted, for example, you know, people have to pay if they're going to use it, you know, professional photographers and so on. Imagine the people being able to say, hey, that's my voice, or that's, you know, the story that I was working on, and having a partnership in, you know, the revenue sharing, really. Because, you know, what's amazing to me is as I've tried to get up to speed on AI, and AI, particularly as it impacts journalism, I've spent quite a bit of money, you know, on a $10 subscription here and a $20 subscription here, and trying to update, because you can't really learn and tell others about it unless you try all of these features. And it feels like a lot of companies are making a lot of money right now because it's portrayed as these are tools that are going to be mind-blowing and important, but you have to pay, you know, for this. And it just would be nice if there are places, especially for journalists, to go where they don't have to pay an arm and a leg to get the help they need to do their jobs. You know, you mentioned layoffs, and I've talked a bit about that on the program as well. And when you're starting out and you're starting your business, you don't have a lot of money. And yet we're saying, okay, but pay for this or buy that or, you know, get that. And, you know, it's kind of like, well, how do you do that when you don't have that money, that capital laying around?
And honestly, when we think of it from a global level as well, what about not only the communities where they don't have the capital, but like they're in a community that, you know, payments like of credit card payments and that kind of thing are not as prominent. I've got a friend of mine who has a startup in the banking space in Africa, for example. And he said like, one of the things that he had to get his head around is like how many people pay each other through text messages, like literally messaging each other. And like then your mobile phone gets topped up with more credit. A lot of the tools that you're mentioning where there's like a cost involved, there's a subscription model, it's automatically prohibitive to a huge percentage of the world's population. And when we're thinking about great quality journalism, some of the best journalists and some of the most underappreciated journalists are the ones that are on the ground in areas that are remote, difficult to access, and who are scraping together whatever resources that they can to make sure that the local people's story gets told. That's such an invaluable service. And like, to your point of like, you know, if you then tell that person, well, you know, we've got like 10 different subscriptions, we'll bundle them together and it'll only be $90 a month. It's like, okay, so you're just telling that person, like, we're going to price you out of being able to do what you do. Again, I love the fact that a company like Legitimate has like a tiered structure where they have premium features, but they also have features that just go on, set up and start using them. Like you mentioned the transcription, like 3 hours like of transcription, like that could be saving $5 a month and that adds up over time. You know, they've got like AI tools there to help refine and like help you in the editing process as well. And one of the things that I love about that, it's like, you know, you've bundled not only tools, but also what previously would have been like an editor to like look at like what you've written. You've bundled in a copywriter to help you. So one journalist now in a remote part of the world with this one login now has access to what 20 years ago would have been an entire newsroom. Like, that's incredibly empowering. In a moment where we are struggling to make sure that newsrooms can stay open, but at the same time, local news is more valuable than ever, having tools and resources like that, that empower people in such a positive way, is absolutely vital.
Wow. I don't think I can say anything better than what you just said. So I do want to talk about some other projects that you're working on. You mentioned Legitimate. Are there other organizations or efforts that you are also supporting through TrustRaise?
Yes, there's quite a few others. You know, the brand safety space, again, is like an area that I've been very passionate about. So what's great is I've been able to continue working with a couple of organizations in that space. There's one called Zephyr, Z-E-F-R. Great organization. I actually worked with them originally when I was at TikTok. And basically what they've done is they've created these kind of reports and tools for advertisers who really want to navigate placing their ads in environments like YouTube, TikTok, and others where, you know, yes, there's a level of safety and that kind of thing, but they want to make sure that it's still aligned with their values and what they think their brand should be associated with. So Zephyr have been able to kind of build an infrastructure in these what's known as walled gardens. So not just the open internet, but these actual like a walled garden like YouTube, where, you know, YouTube advertising happens on YouTube. It's kind of stays mostly on YouTube. It's you have to go through YouTube to get your ads on YouTube kind of thing. That's a walled garden. Zephyr has basically kind of provided an access to that walled garden and also been able to verify, hey, like you as a brand, if you really care about sustainability, we'll help you show up on videos and on channels that reflect that. They've also done a huge amount of work recently in misinformation and helping define where there could be potentially misinformation or stuff that may not be explicitly misinformation, but maybe kind of like in this gray area, borderline. You can't say whether or not it's wrong. In your mind, you're like, well, I still, as like a marketer, don't necessarily feel comfortable appearing here. Zephyr are providing these kind of tools and reports to enable advertisers to do that. So Zephyr have invested a lot in building that infrastructure from ground up. In the last few years, they've taken on some really great clients. And one of the things I love about them is that they're so thoughtful in everything that they do. On the misinformation side of things, for example, they've really tried to look at it from, they want to be as politically neutral as possible. Like it's like misinformation is misinformation no matter what side of the political spectrum you're coming from. They've really kind of honed in on not just the political misinformation, but climate misinformation and some health misinformation and these areas that are often so difficult for people to navigate. And I think, again, this ties back to, you know, making sure that good news media gets funded, because if they're able to advise advertisers where there's, you know, problems, the ones then that can be successful are the ones that there's no problems and that have this better standard for what they publish. So the hope with a company like Zephyr is that not only does it keep brands safe from this kind of like more harmful content, but it also provides that level of assurance that brands would then opt in to areas where maybe they've previously opted out of. Like news has been an area that advertisers have opted out of in recent years. If they're getting told from multiple different sources, hey, actually, these news publishers are good quality journalism. We've checked the content. It's all good stuff. My hope is that that would empower more advertisers to switch on more quality news.
That's a great function, really, because I think for the news business, as we both know, advertising has gone down. And yet it's been, you know, a very important way of funding the newsroom and paying for staffers and so on.
Yeah. And I think the thing I always say as well, when it comes to funding good quality news, is if you're an advertiser and you want to make sure that you're showing up on good quality content, if you are defunding news, if you are actively blocking news, what you are doing is you are empowering the creation of an internet that is going to be filled with terrible content, because newsrooms have the highest standards of what they publish. Like, one of the things that I've been so impressed with journalists is, like, I myself, I don't think I could ever become a journalist, because, like, I have so many, as you can tell, I have so many thoughts of, like, how I personally feel about things that I would want to instill that in, like, lots of things that I write. Journalists go through so many processes and so many checks and balances to make sure that what they publish comes above a board, that it's so factually driven. And whether or not you agree with it, like, there is a standard and the ethics behind it that you're not going to get with a random guy like me just going, I'm going to write a blog. But the tragedy is, it's like, when you take advertising from those newsrooms close. So those folks that have those highest standards, that means that then you're left with lower and lower standards across the board. So if you defund news, and like you are talking about, I want to appear next to good quality content, you're actually doing the exact opposite. Because when you take away the people that are raising the standards, all you're doing is encouraging the lowering of standards. If newsrooms go, the digital ecosystem is worse for it.
You're making some really valid points, because what we're really dealing with is a for-profit model of journalism, where news organizations have been able to make a fair amount of money through advertising and through other revenue sources. Some argue that maybe it's a time for not-for-profit journalism to take shape. Maybe it is that we look at hybrid models, such as, you know, when you look at public broadcasting outlets like PBS, you know, is it the structure itself, the system itself, that is to blame for what seems to be happening?
It's a good question. I think there is room for public funded journalism. I don't think it's the sole answer, though. I think there is no silver bullet, unfortunately. Even if we were to get advertisers opting more and more into online journalism, like, we're never going to get to a point where, oh, like, every newsroom across the world is as funded as they need to be. I think what could potentially happen is, if you look at a lot of like creators on YouTube or TikTok, for example, yes, they've got the ads on the site, but they'll also have a Patreon where they say, hey, like, if you like what I do, $2 a month, $3 a month, like, send it my way. And myself and my wife were doing like a little bit of budgeting recently, such as the fun of like having like a nice little startup consultancy. Budgeting is like something that you have to do pretty regularly. And as I was going through the budgeting, I realized, oh, wow, I'm like supporting quite a few people on Patreon, like, because I just like the content that they make. And I know that they're getting also ad revenue, but all of that together, the Patreon, the ad revenue, that collectively is helping them make a career out of it and make sure that they can keep doing what they're doing. And I like the idea then as well of, like, I almost have, like, you know, people that I love their content. And I'm like, you know what? I appreciate this. This is worth a coffee a month. And again, that's where having a strong brand for individual journalists could be very helpful. You know, when I look at journalists right now as well, that like I listen to or I read pretty frequently, I look at like Kara Swisher and Scott Galloway with like Pivot Podcast. I love Kara Swisher. I think she's like, don't always agree with her, but I think she's a fantastic tech journalist, has some great ideas, great thoughts. But like, you know, she has turned down deals from newsrooms where she was like, financially, does this make sense? Like, can you actually afford this? And she's been able to build up her own brand alongside Scott Galloway. And now they're making revenue through, you know, various different sources. But it's not all just advertising. And I think that's the crucial thing where it's like, whatever we come up with, I think it's going to have to be a mixture of paid subscriptions, Patreon funding, or like people kind of subscribing to a paid Substack, advertising, and also public funding. My worry with just public funding on its own is that it instantly, tragically becomes politicized. I'm sure there's many people in the US listening to this going, well, you know, if you go to the UK, BBC, for example, is public funded. And every couple of years, BBC gets brought up in kind of political arguments because it becomes a question of like, well, the current chair of the BBC said this publicly. So clearly they are on this side of the polit. It's like, no matter what they do, they always get brought up. And if you then solely rely on that, it's always going to have this element of, is this in the public interest? And as much as it should be, you then can't be fully reliant on making sure that it gets the right funding at all times.
I agree. You should be teaching journalism.
Again, I'm not a journalist.
I know. It's so crazy. I've been talking to Kiva, now I'm talking to you, and I feel like, yes, we are on the same wavelength. And, you know, it's a struggle as a journalist, you know, because I know why I became a journalist and I know what really matters to me. And I think that is why so many journalists have held out and tried to avoid all uses of AI and are concerned. And some say it, you know, it's like the kind of the end of the world feeling, if you will. But to hear conversations like this one, you know, it gives me hope. It gives me a sense of, yeah, they're not just taking all that content from whatever news sites exist, putting it into a big old machine. And then when we get the answers, we have no idea who produced it. And we have no idea whether it was, you know, well-sourced the way that well-trained journalists in the US have done for many years.
And the other thing that I would say is that, and going back to the fact that there's like this universal bio through legitimate.net and what I've been saying about building your own personal brand, it's like, as much as we may feel like that there is decreasing trust in the world, in all institutions and everything else, is that for the most part, people trust other people more than they trust machines. For the majority of things, that is the case. And I think in a world where, as great, and my former employer, so I can't say too much, as great as Google is, there have been so many examples of the Google AI system spitting back out things that are harmful, that are incorrect. I love the terms like, oh, it's hallucinating.
Forgive it.
So next time I tell a lie, it's just like, sorry, I was hallucinating there for a moment. It's like, no.
That's what I'll say too. I'll say, you know, you just got it wrong. It's not factual.
Yeah, you just got it wrong. Like, and stop calling it hallucinations. You got it wrong. And again, it isn't going to go away overnight. Like, people are not going to look at the way AI and trust it any more than like a real person that they feel a real connection with. And, you know, as much as it may feel like it's not that situation right now, I do like to think of it from the terms of like, if I think of other industries, if I think of like, even like influencers online, right? If you follow an influencer that you really like, that you trust, and then they go, do you know what I'm loving at the moment? This product. Guess what? You're more likely to buy that product, right? That's why so much money goes into influencers, because people trust them. And guess what? Journalists are the original influencers. Journalists are the original influencers. So let's get back to a model where advertisers aren't just kind of giving influencers products to go, hey, like, check this out. That advertisers are supporting journalists and get journalists back up to that point where, hey, me as a consumer of journalism has like journalists that I can turn to, I trust, that I love, and that then I can support in whatever way I can, and that advertisers support in whatever way they can. And that the government supports in whatever way they can. That's where we should get back to. And again, people trust other people more than they trust technology. It may not seem like that, but that's the situation.
That's great to hear. Here's a little twister. Stand-up comedy.
Yeah, I did stand-up comedy for a while.
Talk to me about that. That's so much fun. I tried to do it over the pandemic and then I got cold feet because it's so scary.
If anybody is ever scared of doing public speaking, do stand-up comedy. Do stand-up comedy because it is the only room, if you are a presenter of anything, right? Let's just say you are doing a presentation at a conference. When you get up on stage, people want you to have a good presentation. They want you to do well. That is a friendly audience. Doing a club in New York in a dark, dirty basement with no AC in the middle of summer at 10:30 p.m., room full of drunk people, they are not your biggest fan already before you stand on stage. It is a scary, scary moment, but I swear my confidence then of like business presentations and public speaking skyrocketed after doing stand-up. So highly recommended if you're scared of public speaking, do stand-up. It's like the fear exposure. Like, oh, you're scared of spiders? Go on Fear Factor and dump yourself in a pool of spiders and you'll think differently afterwards. But honestly, the other thing that I would say with stand-up is I then really started understanding and working on storytelling when I started doing stand-up. So anybody that wants to get into storytelling, it's such a fantastic way of refining storytelling skills. I had a great coach for a while who just gave me some great piece of advice where I would like go up on stage and I would start speaking about something and like, it would be funny as in like, it would get a chuckle. And he would call me off and he goes, that's really funny, but you're using like 3 or 4 too many words. And he would just be like, what do you want to say? And I would just kind of like rewrite it and really bring it down to exactly what I want to say. And then he goes, great. Now, how do you want to say it? And he would get me to like kind of keep on workshopping and refining to a point that a joke that I would have written 3 months ago is finally ready to say like today. And it just made me really think about the words I use, how I use them, and when I use them. And that really helps my storytelling skills as well.
So far, I have been learning so many lessons really from you. And I just want to repeat some of the things I've heard. Number one, for journalists looking for a site or a tool that can help them with transcriptions, that can help them create a bio that ensure that their stories remain their stories and that they get the right credit, we should all go check out legitimate.net. I also heard the idea of comedy as stand-up comedy as a way to improve our storytelling. That's a great tip. And also, you know, you mentioned Patreon. Is that an actual service so that if freelancers and other independents are, you know, seeking to build their business and wanting to perhaps get support financially, is that an actual tool?
Yeah, it's a tool that they can check out, patreon.com. And a lot of like influencers and creators use Patreon. And that's kind of how I know about it, because in my TikTok days, you would see a lot of creators pointing people to their Patreon pages where people could either give a one-off donation or subscribe to them and like pay them a fee every month. So yeah.
Those are all great tips. And you have an upcoming event in November. You'll be speaking at the Brand Safety Summit in November. Can you give us a little bit of a preview of what you'll be discussing and why brand safety is so important?
What I will say is I don't know the exact topic I'll be talking about, but going back to something that I said earlier, what I do know is that going back to empowering advertisers to feel confident about opting into good quality news media, I think the thing that I'll be focusing most on is not about restricting where you show up, but actually opting in to the areas which are beneficial to advertisers in the sense of good quality content, great audience, an engaged audience, and a place where you would be proud to have your brand next to. And it just so happens that a lot of news media fits that category.
Yeah. And so that's something that we talked about with the two-pronged approach of trust raise. One aspect is working with advertisers as they, you know, build their advertising strategy and really making the case that there are a lot of news outlets that are safe in terms of credible information, well-sourced information, and factual. And then the other part of trust raise is its place for organizations like Legitimate to come and say, hey, we have this idea that we think is going to help in terms of trust, you know, fight against the erosion of trust that's going on. And can you support us?
Sums it up very nicely. I need to get that in a snippet so I can transcribe that and put that on the site.
Nice. And then last, I had mentioned earlier, you know, how often do you get mistaken for Dave Byrne from Talking Heads?
It only happened once. Now, people have brought it up to me like, oh, your name's David Byrne. Are you like Talking Heads? And I'm like, yeah, my parents were fans. And I actually really like David Byrne as well. So it happened twice. Because do you know when it also happened? Because David Byrne was doing a Broadway show when I was doing stand-up. And somebody saw a sign that was like, David Byrne on Broadway. And they sent me a photo of it going like, oh, wow. Like, you must be doing great. And I was like, no, I'm definitely not there yet.
Not yet.
not yet. So that was one. But the funniest time that had happened to me was I was actually over in Japan for work. And I was working at Google at the time and they had arranged like a hotel for me. When I arrived, they were kind of like, you're David Byrne? And I was like, yeah. And they were like, we've upgraded your room. And I was like, why? And they were like, there's another David Byrne. And they upgraded me for free to like hire for like a really nice suite in the hotel. So I was staying in this like hotel suite where like the bathroom was like bigger than like most bedrooms. It had like, you know, two walk-in showers, a massive like bathtub in the middle. There was TVs in the bathroom, like in the showers and everything else. The view was incredible. I spent so long taking photos of the view. But apparently what the hotel policy was that they Googled all of their guests in advance to try and understand like who was staying at the hotel. And they Googled me. And of course, David Byrne from the Talking Heads comes up and they're like, oh, he looks important and he looks big. And oh, we'll give him a nice experience and maybe he'll talk about it. And then like in rocks me after like a 16-hour flight, looking a little bit disheveled and definitely not like a musical genius. Yeah, the disappointment was palpable.
Well, but it was not a disappointment for you, and that's good news, right?
I had a great time. I would like to thank David Byrne of the Talking Heads for that experience.
I think I was doing a search of your name, and I had put in some information about you, and yet one of the AI tools, they mixed you up.
See, you can't trust AI. You can't trust AI.
One paragraph about you being a musician, one paragraph, you know, about the comedy. I was like, whoa.
See, there you go. That just proves my point. Trust people. Trust people.
And on that note, I think we are ready to wrap things up. We have just gone on a mind-bending journey, not with the musician, but with the comedian.
I love that.
And if you are buzzing with ideas and you want to hear more, please hit that subscribe button to AI in Journalism. For now, I want to thank Dave for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And hopefully we will be talking again. I have a lot to learn and this has been really great.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to AI in Journalism. If you liked what you heard, please hit that subscribe button. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn to share your thoughts and suggest future topics or even guests. And remember to always keep questioning and keep growing.